It's time for Loud Pipes, the podcast that brings you the best conversations relating to motorcycles, the riding experience, and other motoring adventures. Here are your hosts for this episode.
Loud Pipes, episode 209. Today, we're going to be talking about all the years of track days and things that have been learned, and then the transition to dirt and our experiences with that. Your hosts for this evening are...
Well, I'm the host, but we have several guests this evening, and we're recording on-site. This will be exciting. We are here at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, which is not in Atlanta. It's in Braselton, Georgia. Thanks, Bryce, for the intro. We're going to go around the room. This is that long-awaited episode. We're finally going to talk about the track crash, but we're going to spin it about lessons learned. We've got Alan and Sully in the house, plus Bryce, and then we're going to talk about transitioning to dirt.
It's probably
gonna all of the fun. And we have, unfortunately, another crash to talk about. So let's go around the horn. You heard him first. This is
Bryce Warfield.
Welcome. And in front of me, I have
Alan Garrison.
And to your left,
Sully Garrison.
Welcome. Welcome. And Sully, I know you have been jacked to get on the show. So
very long time, yes.
So what are you looking forward to the most? I've got to know, because I have to make notes, and then I'll have to come back to it later. That's a thing.
Talking about motorcycles and having to put it on the internet.
You're going to put it on the internet?
I mean, you will.
Okay. Hopefully. Just get a little closer if you want anyone to hear you.
Hopefully you will.
But you know what? If you guys just put it there, probably, you can just turn it like back and forth, maybe. That should be fine.
Yeah.
All right. So where do you want to start, Bryce? Track day, lessons learned. Is that a good place to start?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start, you know, where it all started, and then, you know, the transition to dirt, where we are now.
I want one little backstory first from Alan. So I know you were doing long distance riding. You got your, is it 100cc?
100cc, that's correct. That's the coast to coast to coast in under 100 hours.
We had that on a prior show, but then you decided to pivot to track days.
Track days. So we did that. Was it October of 2017? We did the coast to coast to coast. And the very next weekend, this group that we're here this weekend, Performance Riding Experience, they were having a track day at Carolina Motorsports Park in Kershaw. And Sully and I went down there to check it out, met the same group of folks that are here now. And just
a lot of the same faces.
A lot of the same faces. And we decided that, I was like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. So it took a full year. It was October of 2018 before we actually did our first track day. And kind of fell in love with it and kind of took off. And, you know, that's how you and I met through selling a motorcycle.
Yeah, buying the VFR.
And I was just, you know, telling you how awesome track days were. And then, you know, one thing led to another.
Here we are. So it was 4 years of track riding for me. And I think you've got a couple of track days on me. So we'll just call it five.
Call it five. That's good.
Good enough. Yeah. And at the end of the track riding, before we talk about dirt, we want to talk about why we're at Road Atlanta, because this is an interesting transition as well.
So the reason we're here now is that we're, you know, there's always a crash truck at every event, and that's to go out and, you know, pick up motorcycles that have crashed or mechanical issues, whatever. So, you know, the end of the story ends with us here at operating the crash truck together.
ironically,
with the boys. So there's the end of the story.
Very good. So, Sully, you watched the transition then. I guess, you know, you probably followed your dad closely doing the long distance riding. What was your first thought when he's like, I'm going to go track riding?
I wasn't really sure what to think of it, honestly, because, like, I mean, it was different.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's riding big, what would you say, like 500 pound bikes, 600? Yeah.
Oh, that was the FJR, wasn't it?
Yeah. 700? Well, the FJR was about 700 pounds plus me, plus all the gear. It was probably pushing 1,000 pounds. And it was one of those that I decided that had I completed that ride, that was it. I was done with those, and I was going to, you know, start a new challenge. So
check the box. All right. And then you came to enjoy the track days, as I know, because I was there. But before I asked Bryce kind of the same question, so what did you enjoy most about the track day experience from a viewer's perspective?
Probably waking up and hearing the bikes going. Because if you hear like at CMP when you heard them going down the straightaway,
yeah,
that's probably the best noise if you can wake up to it.
And how do you wake up to that when it starts so early?
You don't get up early. That's how. And it was one of my things is that, and I think I might have told the story before that on the trip back coming across America, I was in New Mexico.
Yep.
And stopped at a gas station, and there was a father and son, and they were, you know, I guess he was a truck driver, and they were just outside stretching, just having fun. And it made me realize how much I missed my family and my son. So it was one of those that I was just like, you know, we'll get done and we'll get back, and whatever we do next, we're going to do it together. So
nice.
The track, I'm out there by myself, but for 20 minutes at a time, and then we're back together and so on and so forth.
And Bryce, same question. What was your initial thought when I was like, hey, I think I'm going to go ride on track?
I was pretty impressed. I didn't know you would like do something like that, and I don't know. I was just kind of happy for you, and you know, was glad to be there for most of them, and like all the experiences and all that. It was a good time.
All right, another quick question before we do lessons learned. I think I know your answer, Alan. Favorite track, or favorite track that you've done a track day on?
Favorite track would be VIR South Course by far.
Spoiler alert, mine will be the same. All right, Sully, your favorite as a viewer?
Road Atlanta.
Road Atlanta, nice.
Because not like getting around, because like the hills are just...
Now, does that go for racing too? Have you seen racing at VIR and Road Atlanta?
Seen some racing at VIR. I've seen some racing at VIR, mm-hmm. but like wasn't much. It was car racing.
Gotcha.
But... game me and Bryce were playing earlier. We can play full course, east side, west side of VIR, north, south. You can do both courses except Patriot. I don't know why Patriot's not on there.
Yeah, it's more for like it's real tight and technical, yeah. So you're not going to run car, you know, 600 horsepower DPIs prototypes on there. All right, so. Bryce, bring us home. I know you want to ride too. We maybe can cover that later, but. So just from your experience hanging out, you know, with Sully and Alan and I, favorite track?
I'm going to go with VIR North. I really like that. There's a lot of good places, easy to get around, you know, a lot of good viewing points, good turns, all that. Paddock's mostly flat, so you can walk, you can bike. You don't really need a motorized vehicle. Mm-hmm. Like here at Road Atlanta, I swear it's up, down, left, right. Yeah, my legs are a little sore, but yeah, VIR North probably. My favorite one to look at.
Aren't we all, Bryce?
The thing about this, the South course at VIR is that it's the scarcity of it. One is that, you know, it's only run once a year. So it's,
yep.
You know, it's kind of a treat when you get to do it. But then the change in elevation, the speed, the turns, the power wheelies down the hill, all that just makes for just one heck of a track.
Passing bigger bikes in Oak Tree when they're in fourth gear.
It's true.
Fun times. All right. Well, let's start off, I guess, with lessons learned. So I guess maybe you and I, Alan, can go back and forth with I don't want to say tips, but really just, I guess, our experience, you know, where we started, what was that next level of progression and kind of what seemed to matter at the moment. And I'm going to start from the back. I know that sounds weird, but the thing I notice after all the track riding is the bike doesn't matter as much as you think it does. And it's way more about the brakes than mm-hmm. I ever thought it was going to be. When I first thought I was going to go track riding, I thought it was all about the speed, you know, big motor, getting on the throttle and, you know, cornering as well, I thought would be important. But man, did I experience a change with, it's almost all about the brakes.
It brakes play a huge role in it, as well as your ability and your, you know, the ability to use those brakes too. So,
yeah.
You know, I like to change motorcycles, and I've probably taken at least 10 different bikes on the track.
And it's understatement of the year.
Understatement of the year. Everything from full on race bikes to, you know, I had a FJ09.
Tracer GT, or is what they call it now.
Yeah. And I boiled the brake fluid on those, and coming into turn one at CMP and ran off the track. So yep. To a Ninja 1000, to an R3, you know, a little 271cc, you know, single cylinder, and which was honestly the most fun bike I had out there on the track too. So
just a little lonely because everyone else is on a 600 plus
or 1,000 plus, and I'm out there on 271 and you know, by yourself. So,
all right, you want to, Bryce, you want to cover a lesson learned, or you want us to go back and forth a little more?
I'm not sure. Y'all can go back and forth. I don't, from a viewer standpoint, I'm not sure what lessons could be learned other than maybe like listen to your pit crew when they say, there's going to be two pace laps. You should listen to that. And then your next lap after should be a very dedicated warm-up lap, especially when it's November in at CMP. It's kind of cold down there.
You might be jumping the gun a little bit, but I see what you're saying.
Yep.
Bryce, I kind of find that funny because we were the only pit crew he had. So it doesn't matter what anybody else said. We were the only ones.
So if I'm blaming the pit crew, you know where it's going, right? Straight over there.
Well, before my first track day, I read every single book, watched every single video about body positioning, getting your knees, your elbows down, all that stuff. And went out on my first track day and tried to implement every bit of that. And it was a complete disaster. Come off the track. I mean, I'm all over the place. I'm leaning, I'm, you know, counter leaning, which I got my right butt cheek off and my left, you know, headed on the left side of the bike. It was horrible. Come off the track. And I don't remember who the control rider was, but he comes up. He's like, first time, huh? I was like, yeah. He said, you read a lot of books, didn't you? I was like, yeah. He said, forget all that stuff. He said, just forget. Just go out there and ride. Have fun. Ride. Once you get comfortable, learn the lines. Once you learn the lines, then you can start implementing other things. And it was dead on. By the, you know, second or third track day, I got comfortable enough where you could actually follow lines and get comfortable and start picking up speed. Speed comes with experience, not necessarily with horsepower.
Yeah, you could definitely get wound up in too many different things. And I guess that was the cool thing when I got moved up from novice to intermediate was all the track instruction that we got from the control riders here at PRE. And it was neat to hear that a lot of things that I was doing was right, but then it was great to get the feedback of, okay, well, you know, you got to work on more on these lines, like, you know, these corners, you were kind of blowing those and body position's not there. You know, you got enough lean angle, you got enough speed, but now you got to get off the bike and in order to progress. So it was neat to hear that. And we talked earlier today, I actually recorded it so I can go back to it. Should I step out onto the track again someday? I guess my next overall tip, and this is in no particular order, but just overall like fitness, I'm going to put the three together: fitness, hydration, and preparation. So having all your stuff ready to go the night before, have everything in a bin, not just thrown into the vehicle, hydrated properly, and then just, you know, a general level of fitness. The better I was shape wise, and not, you know, not like a bodybuilder or anything by any means, or a marathon runner, but just the better I was in terms of general shape, the better I felt and the better I ran on the track.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a very physical sport, riding on the track like that, even though it's for 20 minutes at a time. You're by the time you come off the track, you're soaking wet with sweat and you're just exhausted.
You're looking for 25 minutes.
Definitely not looking for 25 minutes. Because you're using your lower body, holding on to the bike, using your upper body, getting off and everything. So it's muscle, it's cardio, it's everything. And you mentioned the hydration part of it. That definitely comes into factor in the second half of a day where it's, you know, your body's tired, and to avoid the cramps, you not only got to drink the water, you need the electrolytes. I picked up, was it Pedialyte, and started drinking that.
Yep.
And once I started, you know, it looks goofy, you know, but once you start drinking that, you know, the cramps went away and it, you know, there's just one less thing you got to worry about. So.
People the track are asking you, are you sick? Are you okay? It's like,
nope.
Hydrating.
Just hydrating. Drinking syrup, but it did the job. So, and then preparation. You know, Rich always gives me a hard time that I'm always prepared for everything. So
you bring one of everything.
I've got everything.
If not two.
And, you know, I always tell my son that, you know, proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. And it's something you live by. So I'm always prepared for everything.
To give people a sense for how prepared Alan was for a track day, in the beginning, I'm like, hey, do you have one of these? Do you have one of those? It got to the point where I didn't ask if you had it. It just was, can I borrow? Like, because I know he's going to have it.
Or how many do you have?
It's like, do you have a valve spring compressor by chance? Yeah, it's in the lower toolbox over there. It's like, great. I'm going to rebuild the cylinder head while I'm here. It's like, small job. Or a tap and die set, maybe for a oil change bolt.
Wow. Anybody?
No comment?
No comment.
What happened there? Come on, enlighten us.
At a track day with the 140, I was doing an oil change right there at the track for I don't know what reason. I just felt right there at the track. I was doing an oil change, put the filter in, and put the oil cover bolts on, and snap one of the bolts. And it took till we got home to completely fix the problem. So lesson learned there, I guess. Do your pit bike repairs at home, not at the track.
The other lesson learned is torque wrench.
Yes, that too.
Or the experience of knowing how hard 20 pounds feels like.
That's enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and stop.
And he also learned a lesson too about, you know, hardened steel bolts, aluminum engine block. So, you can't, yeah, one of them's going to give and. Although on that one, the bolt did snap, didn't it? We ended up easy out in that thing and backing it out with the drill. It wasn't that bad. Threads were fine. Just got a new bolt, put it back together. Very cool. Let's see. You got another tip? You got another thought? Preparation, hydration, covered that. Food. How about sleep? Did you show up late and tired?
I'm big on sleep, so it's one of those, you know, be rested, be ready to go. We start, even though, like, Carolina Motorsports Park, it's an hour away. We learned early on, go the night before, stay the night. We ended up buying, it was an excuse to buy a toy hauler, a camper, and stay the night, and that way you're fully rested there in the morning, and you got a nice, you know, how many times we, you know, summertime going there with the AC blasting and just chill out between sessions and everything. So it was, again, it goes back to preparation. Just, you know, relax on the track, have fun. Never go at 100%. Always have at least 10, preferably 20 in reserve. Just have fun and just, you know, try to incrementally get better.
Oh, I thought you had something. No. I think the other thing that Bryce and I figured out after a while is, although you take a lot of things, you take the right things. In the beginning, we took a lot of stuff and much of it we didn't use. So we learned over time that, okay, you're really not going to get to some of these items. So we slimmed it down. We got it down to just like one or two plastic tubs, you know, bike on the trailer, gas can, canopy, and those two tubs in the Jeep, and off we go. And one of them was just all gear.
And that was from experience. I would kind of do like a self-assessment after every track day and say, okay, what did I use? What did I not use?
Yeah.
What I need more of, what I need less of.
And give me just two or three more 10 mils.
Exactly. And then, you know, just imitation, just go look at everybody else. What do they have with them?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm big on copying successful people and, you know, not only on their setups, but what they do on the track too. So, which helped me, you know, become decent.
Two or three interesting track day riders today. If you want to see a minimalist setup, look at someone with a C5 Corvette with a small trailer and a bike on the back. That will be the most minimal setup for a track day.
No, the minimalist is one with the McLaren. That one.
Or the dude or gal that rides in on the bike, you know, with the suit on and, you know, a backpack.
I don't know if it was track day winners or in too, but there was a guy, he lives somewhere in the upstate. He's got this old Goldwing.
Yeah.
And he pulls a motorcycle trailer with his track bike on the back. So the Goldwing is the tow vehicle and then the track bike's on it. Nice. That was a guy with the FZ09, wasn't it? I think it was.
Is that what he was riding?
Yeah. And he was a control rider for that group. And he was incredibly fast on that bike, but it was, you know, minimalist setup. So,
you know what? I might have a video of that coach actually, because I've got an N2 video of a coach on an MT09 that we talked at length afterwards. So
that might be him. But it was a Goldwing. That was his tow vehicle. So
I have to look it up. It was Ron or something. Anyway, for another day.
But just, you know, every session, just kind of self critique yourself, figure out what you did well and what you could do better, and figure out not only what you need to do, but how to improve. It's not as easy as, oh, just take that corner better, take that with two or three more, you know, miles per hour. It's figuring out the technique that separates the slow from the fast.
Yeah, learn from observation. I guess my last tip, and then we have to get into the inevitable, but the biggest tip that I had is find someone to go with. I mean, I think I did all but just a couple of my track days with you guys over the years. So that was always fantastic because, you know, we got good at it and we got to be good friends along the way, which is a nice bonus. But even track days that I did sort of by myself, I still had someone you kind of partner up with someone. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll share a pit with you, or hey, can I borrow your generator, and you know, that kind of stuff.
And you know, it's the 20 minutes on the track is awesome and fun, but the 40 minutes between where you're just kind of talking about what you did and that fellowship and just kind of that fun and everything, that's for me, it was big of a thing and as many memories doing that as on the track itself. You know, you razzing me for, you know, coming out of a turn in fourth gear, or me razzing you for not being able to pass me besides for that. So
other than that one time when you were breaking in a new bike,
EIR. Yeah. Figuring that out, which was always, cause I was, like I said, multiple, you know, lots of bikes.
Yeah. Every other track day, it's like, oh, what's that?
It's my new bike. It's my forever bike.
It's like, where's the Gixxer? Oh, I sold it.
I sold that.
Where's the Triumph? Where's the Daytona? Where's the Ninja?
I sold them all.
Fair to say.
Well, let me ask you a question. What was your, out of the bikes that you rode on the track, what was your favorite? Yours or otherwise?
You better say the R6.
You know I'm not going to, so save it. Well, so I only tracked four bikes of my own. I rode a couple of yours. The Daytona was very memorable. That was we talked earlier today, that was my first realization that good brakes do actually matter, because the braking on that was significantly better than the stock ones I had on the 750.
Yeah.
They were stock, but they were from an R6.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They weren't Gixxer stock.
Now, and Rich also had the bonus bike of, you know, so at VIR South, they always do a fundraiser every year, and part of that is a raffle. And I was like, you know, I'm going to buy a ticket. And, you know, so I went and bought me a ticket. And Rich is like, well, you bought one. I'm going to buy one too. It was for a bike. It was a Gixxer 1000 track bike that one of the vendors was, you know, was raffling off. And tickets were, was it 50 bucks or 100 bucks?
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it 50 bucks? Yeah, I want to say 50. Because it's two tickets. I did $100.
Yeah, two tickets. So I got, you know, I spent 50 bucks or 100 bucks, whatever it was. I got ticket, you know, 1033. And then Rich comes in right behind me and gets 1034 and 1035. And sure as crap, he wins. So got the horseshoe firmly in place.
Firmly planted, yeah.
But he won an incredible track bike. But I mean, you know, a Gixxer 1000, that is a monster of a bike. And yep. I was, you know. And it was, I wouldn't ride it.
And it was 2006, so it was like in the heyday of those.
It was an old monster.
Yeah. No, you know, no traction control, no ABS. No, I mean, just raw. It's all you. It's you and the monster.
Lots of torques.
Yeah, lots of torques.
And horsepowers.
And it was fun to ride. I rode it once. I don't remember if we talked about that on the show, but I did one track day with it before I sold it.
You screaming the entire way.
It was a ton of work. Put down the same lap as the 750. Just about, which I guess was cool that I got up to speed with it quick, but it was a lot more work, tired out. It's like arms hurt, you know, your nerves are fried because you're afraid that it's going to spin out, or, you know, trying to keep the front end down all the time. Yeah. The couple of times I did get brave enough to kind of get it full song off of a corner, I'm like, oh dear God, like this thing is just going to come, you know, down the front stretch of CMP, like halfway down. I mean, I'm a second or so from the brake marker, and I'm still trying to keep the nose on the ground. You know, the bars are still kind of like loose because the wheel's partially in the air.
Yeah, the speed and the power of that thing was incredible. But it's, you know, it's one of those. It's not everything's about power and size. The you know, I had a Ninja 1000 that I did probably the most number of track days on, and you know, you hear Ninja, you think it's a sports bike, but the Ninja 1000 is actually more of like a sports touring bike that kind of looks like a crotch rocket or whatever you want to call it. And
it's more sport touring.
It was more sport touring. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it had cruise control and everything. I'd always joke with Rich that I'd pass him with cruise control set going down the straightaway and just, you know, have one hand just kind of waving at him.
Yeah. Grip warmers on.
Grip warmers. Seat
heater.
Yeah. Every bit of that.
Cruise control.
But it was one of those where it was also a heavy bike. So my fastest lap I ever turned was with a SV650, which is, you know, it's a mid-sized bike. And, you know, nothing big and nothing really, about 65, 70 horsepower. But it was just the perfect combination of brakes and power and handling. And I turned faster laps on that bike than I did anything else. So,
well, Bryce is not going to like this, but my favorite to ride was still that 750. And not because it was a Gixxer or because it was 750, I think it's the whole combination. It was fully track prepped. You know, it ran on slicks. It had race body work. It had a rock hard seat on it. The R6 brakes, you know, stainless or steel brake lines. I mean, it was just a race bike. It was very rigid and it was fun to ride.
Until you wadded it up.
Until I wadded it up.
I'm telling you, if you had more of a dedicated track prepped, more of a newer R6, you would agree with me that the R6 would be the better track bike.
Well, maybe, but I didn't ride one of those. So of the four that I rode, so 2000 Yamaha R6 is where I started. Fun bike, but older, carbureted.
Older bike, yeah.
Yeah. And I just cramped, you know, the chassis-wise, very committed riding style and just short, cramped for a person of my size.
And that Gixxer 750, that was like the sweet spot where you have the high-end horsepower, but you also have the low-end torque.
Yeah.
In a small, lightweight package, and it's just, that is the perfect track bike.
And it wasn't as nimble as the R6, but it was more nimble than the 1000.
Exactly, yeah.
And it was just,
and I had one and I sold it too.
It was just more fun to ride. So, well, you had two.
I had two of those. Yeah. And I sold it.
That one I bought from you.
Yeah. That's
and
right,
you bought another one.
I bought another one.
And sold that.
And I sold that one too. Everything's for sale.
But yeah. So I guess we can get into that. So yeah, I wadded up the 750 and it was an interesting transition because I had just spent a good amount of money on it, putting good suspension in it. So I put a full K-Tech rear shock on it and did a K-Tech cartridge kit in the forks. And it was all set up for my weight and my riding class and all that. So it was good to go. And it was fun to ride in that configuration because now it was more set for me. What are you guys doing over here, dance party?
Because like you can hear the bass cranking in the background.
Well,
it's just...
Our track day may be done here at Road Atlanta, but at the
party never
the little track across the street, they're doing like some kind of drifting contest. So they're over there making smoke and there's music playing. It's kind of fun.
So I made reference to it and it just now, and then you made reference to it at the beginning of why we are here and why we're not on the track. So
right.
Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah. So the 750 I loved. You guys got to stop dancing. The 750 I love to ride, that's the one that I crashed. And maybe another lesson learned there is at least my headspace wasn't right that day. You know, was it the first session we were out there? You were like standing up on the pegs and goofing off. And
I was goofing, yeah.
We got off, fussed
yeah.
at
yeah.
by the control riders.
And like I said, PRE is the group that we usually ride with. Very professional group, very fast group.
Yeah.
All ex-racers are still current racers. You know, and there's other groups and they, you know, they do good things, but they have a reputation.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes they get that reputation because the things that they have a reputation for are true. This particular group, won't name names. They were known for having hot dogs in the group and, kind of letting anybody ride and really not policing what they do. So they, you know, they would draw a certain crowd, whereas PRE definitely draws. This discussion today draws a different demographic, you know, and a different rider.
Yeah.
So this particular day was what, October?
October 16th. And it was kind of cold that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And this will probably give away the name, but this was a combo with a riding school. So you have a track day and you have a riding school mixed in. Plus you have demo rides for some factory bikes. So you have like three things going on at once.
Yeah, they always say an accident is not the result of one thing. It's multiple things that come together.
Yeah.
And just like Rich said, we were stuck in the novice group with this because we had never rode with that. We didn't have a history with them. So they didn't know
one, maybe one or two other. Yeah,
but we were still stuck with a novice. And novice can be anywhere from, you know, somebody's pretty fast who just hasn't been evaluated to move up, or to brand new riders.
Yeah.
And everything in between.
And it ran the gambit that day.
And it ran the gambit.
Brand new people that had never been on a racetrack before, and there were people itching for a bump. You know, there are people like ourselves riding an intermediate with other groups, you know, who has to start there. And the novice group was mixed in with this class and demo rides to top it all off.
Yes, it was it wasn't the Yamaha Race School, but it was one of their in-house schools of this group that's not to be named. And then, like I said, Yamaha was there doing demo rides. And they, instead of having their own separate, you know, group or whatever, they stuck them right in the middle of novice. And it created, kind of backing everybody up. And then you kind of add everything together, and it brings us to Rich's.
They might have been with other classes, but we didn't see it. At least we know they were with novice.
Yeah, they put them with novice because, I mean, like I said, you're not going to ride a demo bike as fast as you're going to ride.
Yeah, true.
You know, so they stuck them all with novice. So,
but like I said, the part where I think I went wrong is the headspace wasn't right. Like I said, we were, you know, admittedly a little frustrated to be in that group. And then we've got the extra chaos. Even on pit road, it was like, I think after the first session, like a bunch of bikes had gone down like very early, and we kept coming back to the pits. And I was getting off and talking to other people, and we were all kind of goofing around on pit road and not focused to the point where I rolled down pit road with the kickstand down. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the same guy that fussed at you for standing up. You know, it was like, hey, like, you know, he's tapping his head. He's like, you know, get your head in the game, you know? So that part's on me. But then the track incident, again, is a combination of factors. You got all this chaos going on, and you and I, you know, for our level, are fairly fast riders. So we were just waiting to be given the green light to get, you know, get our giggity on, basically. So, and it was cold, so they're like, yeah, we'll do two slow laps, and then we'll kind of start to turn you loose. And I think this was only the second or third session. They're like, okay, now we're going to do, like, you know, point the pass, or, you know, start letting you guys go after two laps. So we come around after a couple laps, and there's this other bike, like a Gixxer 1000, some got like the factory edition, Gixxer Bro, yeah. Crazy fast on a straightaway, so that's how I knew it was a leader bike. But an absolute hot mess in the corners, like to the, not like just parking it in the corners, but parking it and wide, and to the point where the incident that I had, I thought he was off track. So we come to turn three at CMP. So you got a straightaway down, you got down the front stretch. That's your start finish line. You got a hard left. Then you've got a quick right this turn two. And then you have a turn three, which is kind of a gentle left, right? Yeah, it's not. It's not real. It's not a sweeper, but it's not real crazy. But you're like just getting up to third gear maybe at that point, right? So this guy's so wide, I'm thinking he's in the dirt, right? Like in my mind, I'm like, he's off the track. I can put this one behind me and I can move on. Well, he didn't. He comes back on the track. So I'm like, all right, forget it. I'm just going to throttle out of this. And I've seen the way he's braking. When I get down to the next turn,
throttle out.
Yeah. And when we get to the next turn, I'm like, he's going to be history because I'm breaking deeper than he is. This should be a no brainer. That should be your other clue, right? I'm like, this is a no brainer.
You know, another thing they teach you, one of the first things they teach you, the control riders, be predictable.
Be predictable.
No matter how fast you are, how slow you are, be predictable. Be predictable with your lines, be predictable where you're going to end up on the straightaway. You take a line, keep it as much as you can. So
the other great tip they tell you is if there's ever any doubt, don't make the pass or don't do it. Whatever you're thinking of doing, if you've got any little shred of doubt, don't do it.
Don't do it.
But in my case, so you made the right decision. You backed out. You saw this mess coming.
So it was, we were.
But I was farther engaged.
Yeah, you were definitely further engaged. I had already backed off a little bit. And because like I said, it was the Yamaha demo bikes, and they were slowing the whole group down. We were still stuck behind the control riders, so that was slowing us down even more. And it was just this big wad of bikes who were ready to go. And then this And then this one guy who was literally all over the track. He'd be on the far inside, then he'd go to the far outside. And if you're on the track by yourself, that's fine. Do whatever you want to do. But when you're stuck with a big group like that, it's a recipe for a disaster. And I kind of saw that.
And it was.
And it was. And spoiler alert. And I saw that, and I just backed off. I backed off probably 4 or 5 bike lengths just to get away from that, to give myself a little margin of error. Rich was not able to do that because he was kind of more kind of stuck in that group.
I felt more committed because, like I said, going into turn three, I figured this guy's behind me, or at best, we're going to be side by side. Then it's going to be a quick drag race, quick outbreak, and then we're going to get on with our day because we want to go. And maybe we even had thoughts of like, hey, let's maybe get evaluated with these guys. Maybe we'll ride with them some more because
get bumped. Yeah.
We like riding CMP. They ride CMP. So,
and the whole reason we did that track day was as a convenience.
Close to home.
PRE, yep. We had already finished for the season, and you know, CMP is kind of our home track, and you know, N2 was doing a close track day, and you know, late in the season, so
yep.
We jumped all over it.
Yeah.
So yeah, we figured we'd ride with them some more and everything. So during this session, we're riding along. Like I said, I'd already kind of seen the potential what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then you know, so what corner was it that you were coming around? So they call it the carousel.
The carousel, but. So I guess we'll go back to the past. So turn three is kind of where this starts. Like I said, I think the bike's behind me. I'm gone. So now I'm into turn four, which is a left. And then I guess the carousel, they technically call 5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7.
Yeah. So turn four to the left. And then it's just think of it as one long sweeper, even though they label it as three turns.
Right.
So I'm thinking when I get to the brake zone and I'm turning left for four, I'm thinking this guy's long gone. And Alan's story will be different because you had the fortunate or unfortunate position of riding behind me.
Yep.
So I'm hitting the carousel like I normally do, and we come through the carousel pretty well. And I'm coming through about the midpoint, and then all of a sudden, I'm out. I'm blacked out. I don't remember what's going on. But in my mind, I'm kind of like, as I'm coming to, I'm like, I'm remembering like my right shoulder running into the side of another bike, and I come to and I'm like, oh damn, I'm in the grass. Like this is not going to be good.
This ain't good.
This is not good. And then I'm, you know, I go to stand up and I can't cause my thumb is broken. And then I try to use my other arm and I can't cause my shoulder is all separated. And by now the track workers are there and they're like, Hey. Do you know where you are? And I'm like,
I'm on the ground.
I think I'm at a track day. They're like, yep, good guess.
Close enough. You're not getting airlifted out. So from my point of view, like I said, I'd already backed off, and we'll call him Ricky Racer to give him a name. And so he was on the far outside of the track, and he had already come all the way to the inside of the track. And this section, it's a real wide section of track. It's probably 2.5 lanes wide. Yeah. And you come all the way to the inside, and then
you kind of run this carousel like a double apex.
You really do, yeah.
You end up kind of coming back right a couple of times, and I hadn't done this technique, but advanced riders would talk about a little bit of brake to set as you finish that second apex, or the first one, so you get correctly set for the second one.
Right.
I was not doing that, so I don't think we'll get to it in a second. I don't think I would have gone for the brake there, not except maybe panic.
Well, so Ricky's on the far inside, and you know, Rich is to his left on the kind of towards the middle to the outside of the track, and next thing I see is that he comes swooping out, you know, from right going left, and I couldn't tell if he actually made contact with Rich or if he just got close enough where Rich had to make that decision to take you know evasive maneuvers. And I'm not sure. Did we ever determine if it was brake or gas that you applied too much of?
Looking at the tires, as long as we did, Bryce and I were suspecting some brake. Either I applied it or from bike contact, because I don't have the race protector levers on there or anything. So based on what we saw with the tire, it could have been brake, or it could have just been how it slid across the track. But there's definitely sliding. Yeah, we've got some good pictures of the tire where, you know, it was definitely sliding at lean,
right,
for sure at some point. So
and so he was running, you know, straight slicks, race slicks, and race slicks are great when they're hot.
Yes.
And these tires, even though you had tire warmers, were running parade laps, which is real slow laps.
Yeah.
Which is basically all it's doing is just cooling your tires down.
Yeah.
You're not generating any heat, and therefore your tires had already cooled down. Again, like I said, it was a perfect storm of of various circumstances that all come together that led to that crash. So, you know, cold track tires, you know, hot track tires, you'd almost climb up the side of a wall. I mean, they're that sticky and they're that
yeah.
great,
but very cold ones are inspiring.
You know, worse than riding wooden tires. So he stabs the brake, just trying to avoid the
maybe.
Yeah. We'll just say
we don't know.
He stabbed the brake.
We all have no data.
And with street tires, who knows? It probably wouldn't have done anything. He probably would have stopped and then avoided it,
or stood up.
Yeah,
yeah.
But with cold track tires, it just locked the front end and the front end tucked, and then so you went down on your right in a low side. And then low side is when you
very fast
low side, and he went down on his right hand side. But when he went down, that's when he hit his head. He smacked his head on the asphalt, and at that point it was lights out.
Yeah, I was out from the get go.
He remembers nothing of the crash. So he low sides, smacks his head on the asphalt, and at that point he's just a limp noodle. And there was still so much momentum that the bike picked back up.
And
flipped over to the left, so it was a low side that picked back up and went into a high side, which means you actually go over the bike. So, you know, Rich is just kind of tumbling like a rag doll because he is out cold.
Yep.
And that's where, you know, that's where the damage had come in to your hand and to your shoulder and everything else. And again, like I said, I'm behind him. I'm watching the whole daggum thing.
I can't imagine that. You're watching the tumble and you're just beside yourself, I'm sure.
Some would say that my memory is worse than yours.
I would imagine, because I'm not the medical, I have to live through your memory because I don't really remember
it. And that's a helpless feeling because you can't stop. I mean, if I can't stop to help him on the track.
Right.
The best thing I can do, and we saw it today to work in the crash truck. The best thing I can do as a rider is get off the track.
Yeah.
Get off the track so the medical personnel in the crash truck can come and tend assistance. So I saw it. I'm looking at it and I'm turning my head watching it and I'm just cussing in my helmet. It's like, man, that's not good. He's not moving. He's out cold.
Yeah, down in the grass.
So I turn around and I just haul ass off the track and get off the track as quick as I can. And I remember I go off and I park in my pit. I go right up to Bryce and I say, Bryce, your dad had a crash. He's down right now. The trucks are heading out to him. I'll go see what I can find out. Stay here. And that was all I said. Park the truck. And I went over. There was an ambulance sitting over to the side. They had two of them. So they hadn't rolled the second one, which is a good sign. And I just wanted to listen to the radio traffic. And by the time I got over there, he was alert and he was conscious, which is important. And I'll let mm-hmm. Rich explain why that's important. So I'll let Rich take over from here.
Well, that comes into the medical side. So as I was trying to do some follow up on like how long I was out and stuff like that, the track crew was like, "Yeah, you were up when the crew got to you." And they're like, "We know that because if you were not up when we got to you, you get a free, well, not free, but you get a ride on the MedFlight helicopter."
Free, yeah. Yeah. So their policy is if you're unconscious, it's an automatic flyout.
Yeah.
And we've seen, I don't know, four or five different people be flown out. And it's a pretty pricey bill. So, you know, you had just come to right as they were approaching. So, you know, you were able to avoid at least that charge.
The bigger bill. Yeah. Yeah. And just, I guess, quickly touch on the injury. So it was a broken thumb at the base. And then, oh, you made notes. Look at you. Was that from the ER? Yeah, those words are too big. I'll keep it in my terms. I'll read from a closed fracture of the base of the proximal phalanx of the left thumb. Essentially,
a broken thumb.
The joint all the way down to your hand.
Closed meaning it didn't come out of the skin.
Then it was an AC joint separation on the right shoulder, type 4, if I remember correctly. So all of the ligaments are gone. Mm-hmm. Collarbone intact, but definitely separated and north about 40 millimeters from where it should be. And I only remember the 40 millimeters because the surgery got it within 2 millimeters. Mm. And apparently that's way beyond the spec that they can hope for.
Wow.
For that kind of thing. So I have cadaver parts from someone else to, it's like a tendon from a donor's leg to, you know, hold the clavicle down in place until it heals. And then kind of body takes over from there, but I don't have any pins or screws, which we'll get to a little bit later with your fun. But you know, I had pins in my thumb that they removed once it healed. Mm. Interesting story there. I didn't realize I'm a fainter, apparently. So they've got my hand down on the table. They reach down with a pair of pliers and pull these pins out. He's like, not going to hurt at all. Grabs it, twists it back and forth, pulls it straight out. And I'm like, holy cow. And then it's like the tunnel vision setting in.
Did you faint?
Yeah, the visit. So he's like, let's get you up on the table and lay you down. And as I'm standing up, he's like, nope, we're going back to the chair. And I was out. Out like a light.
So a funny side story, not really just related to fainting. So
thank you.
I was I'd never fainted either. I think I did one time before. Anyway, so I was next door helping a neighbor put up a beam in his house, and it was his old 1950s house, old mill house. And so we're putting this beam up, and I've got these real soft-soled shoes on, and we got this huge beam, and I'm holding it over my head, and I step down. And I step on this nice 1950s, ooh, real thick gauge,
ooh,
nail.
Oh.
And it's in. It's all the way in. Almost poking through. It was so far in.
Yeah, you could actually see it.
Yeah, you could see it.
You could see it on the other side. You could see a little black dot.
So it's stuck in my foot. And I remember sitting down on this ladder, and I'm taking my other foot and trying to push this piece of wood out. And as I'm trying to push that piece of wood out, it's the nail is kind of moving back and forth inside my foot.
Yeah.
Which I guess it was just enough for me. And then I fell out. Didn't even realize it. I just, you know, again, you just wake up and it's just nice and calm and you kind of come to. But so apparently when I was trying to push that out, I fainted and fell off the ladder and fell onto the floor. And when I fell onto the floor, I landed on another nail, which went straight into my arm, almost came out the other side. And my neighbor, who was a fireman and a paramedic, he graciously, while I was still unconscious, went ahead and pulled both of the nails out. So I never felt anything.
Eek.
But when I came to, I just got sawdust all over my face and two holes in my body, so that I didn't have, you know, a couple minutes prior to. So I get the fainting part.
Yeah. Well, and it happened in the other time it happened prior to that was surgery prep for the shoulder. Hmm. They were trying to put an IV in, and what they found out is I was probably a little dehydrated for surgery and I hadn't hydrated enough. So they're having a hard time finding the vein. Every time they find it, either it moves or it kind of collapses, and they're just poking and fishing and all that prodding with the needle. And of course, me watching it, same thing. I start getting lightheaded. I'm like, man, I feel really, I'm sweating. I'm getting hot. And they're like, oh no, it's a reaction to the needle.
It's coming. Yeah,
settle down. So I should have known when they pulled the pins out, it was the same thing. And then I had another IV given at some point, and it was the exact same thing. So now I got to be careful when a needle's coming.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm kind of a fainter. So,
and it's one of those where, you know, my stepdad, you know, one of the toughest men I've ever met, scared to death of a needle.
Yeah.
And you know, I bet he could fight a bear, or at least he could in his prime, but a needle would put him on his back. So,
yeah. Yeah, and the other crazy thing with the surgeries is they were separated due to scheduling. Mm. So my thumb was done almost right away. And trying to take care of myself, thankfully Bryce was a huge help. My wife was a big help, and Cameron, and just they did it all. The challenge was I had thumb on left hand and right shoulder. So effectively both arms were just about useless for a period of time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, like, wow.
Dang. Say, what, Bryce, what was that? Can you say that again?
I said still are.
Wow.
Dang.
Maybe I'll just let you take over.
Cuts deep.
You want to tell the rest of it?
Okay. So,
I'm just kidding. So, the challenge with the surgery scheduling is the thumb was done, and the pins came out right after my shoulder was fixed. So, it's like the thumb was done, recovered, moving on to physical therapy right at the time my shoulder surgery was happening. So then the recovery all started over again. Nice. What is it?
That was crisp.
What is it?
It's a root beer.
What? No, you got to be more specific.
More specific. So come on.
A&W Zero Sugar Root Beer.
All right, Bryson, you got... Hold on. From 2020.
Just have a Diet Coke here.
The only
thing in the fridge.
You're fancy. I won't open mine, but it's Wellesley Farms' finest purified water.
And I'm sharing Sully's root beer. So.
or taking his root beer. Yeah, we're doing the drinks a little bit late.
That last one sounds about right.
So, yeah, I'm not going to harp on the recovery, but essentially the accident was October 16th, 22. And it was pretty close. So after I had the surgery, the surgeon's like, yeah, it's probably going to take you about a year to get back to where, you know, you feel like you're as close to you're going to get to as 100%. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of crazy. That seems like it'll be fine. Cause they're telling me PT is going to be like 6 months. Well, yeah, PT is about 6 months. And then you take over at home and it's a very, you know, in your 40s, deep in your 40s, it's a very slow
things don't heal like they
recovery.
Used to.
Yes.
Now, in going back a little bit from the accident, we had already started having discussions about trying some different type of riding.
Yeah.
You know, the track riding was fun, but again, like me with the long distance stuff, I did it. Check off the box.
We were doing it. The kids were observing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do something where we could get both Sully and Bryce and Cam, get them involved in the actual, you know, in the sport of it. So we had already started talking about doing some dual sport riding. And then, you know, Rich's accident kind of accelerated those plans.
Lit the fire to all that.
Lit the fire. And like I said, me watching Rich crash, I was like, okay, what? That's it. I'm done. For now, at least.
Yeah.
I don't want to get back on.
Yeah, I need to step away.
I need to go do something safer.
Yeah. Well, interesting. One more factoid, because then we got to get into your surgery might have even been gnarlier than mine, but I'm pretty okay with most things that we talk about. You know, I talk about the bike. I looked at the bike forever when we had it in the house. None of that stuff bothered me. When I looked at the helmet, I'd feel sick to my stomach every time. I don't know what it is about looking at the helmet. And I still have it, but if I take it out of the bag, I'm like, oh, like I don't feel good.
And you could have that same accident 100 times.
Yeah.
And you would never hit hard enough to knock you unconscious again.
Yeah.
It was a simple low side that you just happened to just hit the perfect spot.
Yeah.
You know, we saw, you know, 10 low sides today, and all 10 of those just got up and walked away.
Except that one. That was a little tough for me.
Talk about that guy.
We didn't talk about it in the truck, but that one was tough. We were coming up the hill.
That hit close to home.
I'm like, oh boy, I might need a tissue here. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was.
And that's really probably the first time that you've seen something like that since, you know.
Because he just laid there.
He just laid there.
That was the thing. And I'm like, oh God, like that was me. I mean, this was different. I guess the EMT was there helping him up. But yeah, I had a, we had a moment this afternoon.
So after, like I said, after that, we had already decided that, you know, we were going to pick up more dual sport riding, and Rich's accident just kind of helped accelerate that.
Yeah.
And then, so that was in October. Fast forward, you know, honestly, before the end of the year, I'd already sold all my track stuff. Got all my suits still, not getting rid of my suits. Not saying they fit, you know, but, I still have them. And then, we started getting into dual sport riding, you know, doing trail riding, you know, different types of riding. So that was the next phase.
I just want to say that the dual sport thing didn't go so well on at least our side. Cause instead of, getting dual sports, Dad, you got a 08450 instead. And, now we have a 15250.
You know, there's one other lesson learned we didn't talk about. Good gear. Like all my stuff. I mean, concussion aside, all the gear held up. I didn't have a scratch on me. You know, the gloves didn't tear, the boots didn't tear. The suit's got a couple of like abrasion marks in it, but it didn't tear open. The only part of the suit that tore is a little bit of the neoprene around the shoulder. And that obviously that's not leather. That's just all synthetic stuff. But Alpine Star suit, Tech Air Ready suit, which if I go back, I would have an airbag for sure. And, you know, Shoei premium helmet, X14, fantastic. But yeah, everything else held up good. So the abrasion part of it all, 100%. So yeah, dirt transition.
Transition to dirt. I have a kind of a reputation. If I do something, I jump into it and go really deep on it. So we, you know, I went through a couple different dual sport bikes and went from, you know, small bikes to KTM 890 Adventure R's, which is, you know, $16,000-$17,000 bike to, to, you know, a little Honda CRF 300, L Rally,
yep.
Which is, you know, it was what, it was September before we actually all were able to go out and do a dual sport ride together. And, we went down to NRE, State Park, which is outside of Whitmire, South Carolina, which is, you know, it's an incredible park and with some really good trails. And it was September 9th, as a matter of fact, when we all were able to get together and go ride for the first time. And, you know, everything went well until it didn't.
Yeah. And to set it up a little bit, we've got a dichotomy of bikes here. So you're on the CRF 300 L Rally. Is that, that's the full name, right? So you're on that. Sully's on the...
It was the 230L.
The 230L. CRF 230L.
It's like the dual sport version of the 230.
But then on this side of the table, Bryce is on a KLX 140, which is still more like a trail bike, but it's off-road oriented. You know, it's not a dual sport anything. It's, there's no lights or anything on it. And I'm on a, you know, a very mild KX 450. You know, trail bike, right? We talked about that. And Bryce is, at least on that 140, is bad fast.
He was fast. He was incredibly fast.
Like, we're all chasing him to the point where you made a video. He was sitting there like a minute and a half waiting for us on a trail that takes less than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was embarrassing how much faster he was than us. So
I was on the 230. You were on the 300.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that pause, we take off again and Alan's leading.
So, yeah. So somehow I ended up in front and Bryce was behind me. And thankfully he was, because I, you know, I've got a video of, I call it my accident, but, you know, there was no crash involved. So I'm in front. We had already decided that was our last session of the day. And we kind of joked that, you know, we were all hanging out at the trailhead by the trucks. And you're like, hey, let's do one more trail.
One more. Yeah, just one more.
One more trail. And the thing is, you never do one more trail. Once you're done, again, go back to mindset.
If you start saying you're done,
yep,
you're done.
If you even think it, you're done. And we're like, you know what? No, this, we're having so much fun.
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen?
Let's run C again. One more time.
What's the worst that could happen? So the CRF 300L Rally was a good bike, but with comically soft suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I'm chasing Bryce, and he gets to a stopping point, and literally he's got a part in his little video where it's over a minute where he gets off the bike.
He's standing there monologuing, waiting for us, talking
about his bike, and, you know, just
he's doing a full rundown of the bike.
We're gonna post that in.
Yeah, he's musing about different things and, you know, looking at butterflies and everything else.
That's gonna have to be on that.
It's on YouTube.
Compilation of all.
Yeah, we have a link of it.
Compilation of all the crashes.
So, and again, like I said, this is our first day where we're all riding together, and this was basically almost a year's worth of kind of work that brought us all back together again, you know. And
I was just a month shy of the anniversary,
right?
Of my
right.
crash.
And, you know, Rich was, you know, like I said, he was first time back out on the bike. We had just had that conversation earlier that day as to how cool that was that we were able to ride with our boys.
Yeah.
You know, not just them be there, but riding
together.
We're
all doing it together.
Sharing the same experiences and, you know, their point of view was different than ours and everything else. And
the same point of view as we're all trying to catch Bryce.
Three of us trying to catch Bryce. So last one of the day, don't do one more. So I lead out and I'm trying to, honestly, I was trying to lose Bryce is what I was trying to do.
Mm.
And that didn't work out well. And we come around a corner and, like I said, you can see it in the video that just the rear end bounced so hard that I just kind of brushed an embankment. And actually, Bryce is showing a video now. So we came around a corner, tail end kind of kicked out a little bit, and it bounced me into this embankment on the left hand side. And, you know, I've done a lot of stupid stuff in my life and over my years, and I've gotten hurt a lot, but I've really never broken a bone. And it's a different pain. So as soon as that happened, I was like, ooh, that something doesn't feel right.
The funny thing is, I don't know if you remember, but your first instinct was, it's broken.
I know it's broken. That was my first thought, yeah.
But then later, you're like, ah, no, I think it's just sprained. You were walking around even.
I was in extreme pain. So first thing, I had on this really nice Arai XD4, really nice helmet. My very first thought, don't throw up in my helmet. Because as soon as it happened, that wave of nausea just come rushing up. And we're hot and sweaty, and and everything else. And my first thought, and in the video, I stick my leg out and I just pull over to the side. I was like, yeah, something's not right.
This is not right.
And I had on motorcycle boots. I had on Forma adventure boots, which are nice, you know, touring adventure boots, but not, you know, like motocross style,
not
hard
really
protection,
rigid,
not yeah. really rigid boots that would keep, say, you know, from breaking your ankle or something. So, get pulled over. And like I said, the pain is intense and immediate and it just kind of takes over your whole body. And, it took me a couple minutes and just to kind of get my wits about me. And then, you know, I even took me, this was my left leg. So what happened is I hit the embankment and my foot got caught in the embankment. My foot went left and my
twisted.
Body and yeah. twisted backwards and my body kept going straight. So, and I didn't really know it. I just thought I just kind of, maybe just kind of bumped it and crushed it. But apparently that's what happened is it turned back.
The twisting.
Yeah. And it just, and we'll get to what happened to it. So we pull over, you know, go through all that. I even take that leg and I put it back in second gear and, you know, we're probably 1.5-2 miles still deep in the trail. So, yeah. You know,
we were easily 10 minutes yet back
easy,
to the trailhead.
Yeah. So I'm just have to prop my left leg out and just ride back to the trailhead with a, you know, come to find out it was a broken leg. So we get back to the trailhead and then, you know, I'm in intense pain. I finally get off the bike, but I, you know, you get off on the left side of the bike and
oh,
it was
yeah.
my left leg.
Yeah.
And I even get off on my left leg and, you know, not thinking a thing about it, yeah. not knowing what was in the future.
Sit down on
the trailer. And like I said, an incredible amount of pain. And I just kind of sit there for a minute and I'm thinking, you know, you're kind of in denial, like, it ain't broke. You know, it'll stop hurting
yeah,
there
it's
pretty
a strong
soon.
Strong sprain.
Strong yeah. sprain. Yeah. And then I finally was able to get Sully to take the boot off. And then, you know, I've got a great picture of that where it looks like a baseball on the side of my ankle. And I was like, that's swollen pretty fast.
Yeah, that was very
but
fast
very
swelling.
Only yeah. swelling right there. And the funny part was when Sully was taking the boot off, and they're pretty stiff boots. And then, you know, my leg being swollen probably didn't help. And he's trying to take that boot off, and he's working it back and forth, and and the pain, especially knowing what actually it was, the pain was incredible of him doing that. So,
well, was that even after the handful of ibuprofen I gave you, or whatever
yeah,
that was?
It was. You had thankfully Rich had a bunch of ibuprofen, and I popped every one that he had. And
he took two. He's like, you got any more?
Please give me anything. Morphine. What do you have? You know, anything that you got. So, you know, so we sit there in a little bit and just kind of reminisce about the day. And then, you know, with the pain as the mindset. So, you know, Sully and Rich and Bryce, they get all the bikes loaded up and then, you know, I got to drive home. So, we hop in the truck and, you know, we head home and, you know, I called my wife on the way and said, hey, I need you to go give me some compression wraps and some ice packs. And she's like, for what?
And she looks at it and she's like, no.
Yeah, yeah. So come to find out, you know, I broke my leg, broke my tib and I broke my fib, tore a bunch of tendons, tore a bunch of ligaments, and really messed it up pretty good. You know, you look at the video and it doesn't look like much of anything.
Yeah, it doesn't look that bad.
It's just like,
he just
kind of
brushed
an embankment. Yeah, you know, but it messed it up. So that was on September 9th. I ended up having surgery on September 15th. I had a plate and 5 screws, and then they did this thing called a tightrope where they actually drill through both of the bones, and they run a wire through it, and the wire is actually what holds everything together while the tendons and the ligaments heal. Yeah. So, you know, I don't remember how much your surgery was, but mine was $55,000 or $60,000 is what it would have cost.
Yeah, it was similar. I stopped counting somewhere around $80,000
yeah.
on the bills.
Now you had multiple, you had multiple places,
and all the therapy was quite expensive too. And the therapy is where most of the out of pocket comes from.
Yep,
because you've got a little bit each visit that you've got to pay.
Yeah,
and I only say I stopped counting because that's when I have a high deductible health plan. So when I hit the deductible, then it was 100%. So I just stay on a stop counting the bills from there, but. Yep. I still probably paid about $15,000 out of pocket.
No kidding.
For all that.
So again, it's expensive hobbies already, and then
you add
stuff like that into it, and it really kind of multiplies it. But
yeah, anytime you look at a piece of gear that's less than $1,000 and you're debating it,
don't debate it.
You should just buy it and stop worrying about it because
which is a great way to justify buying expensive gear.
Yeah, if you don't have it, I mean, here's the alternative. So
yeah, now mine, you know, the doctor in my neighbor who's a racer, he was saying that just how that actually happened. Had it not been my ankle, it probably would have transferred up to my knee and probably would have tore my knee up. Ooh. So it was one of those where it was it just how it happened, something was going to break, and I guess I'd rather it be an ankle than a knee. So But like I said, I had surgery, had the plates and screws, and just, you know, terrible amounts of pain from that, and the recovery time, which I'm still, you know, this is
limping today.
Yeah, this is March of 24, and that was what, 7 months ago, and I'm still, you know, still have pain, still limping, step the wrong way, you still feel it. So, but that brings us to now.
Yeah, and that's how we got to Road Atlanta. Is I don't remember when it first happened. I guess you probably caught wind of it, that they needed a crash truck operator here for Road Atlanta, and we've never been here on the track, so it was kind of interesting to come down and help, not having ridden here. It would have been cool to do CMP or VIR, but they have their own sort of crash truck set up, so it's a little different here, where the provider kind of brings everything that they need to run the track day, minus, you know, track admission, safety staff, and EMS.
So,
you know,
John Allen, who's the founder and the really he runs all the operations for PRE, Performance Riding Experience. He sent an email maybe late January, early February, saying, "Hey, if, you know, we need crash truck drivers.
Right, we need a solid truck and a trailer that can haul 2-3 bikes.
Solid truck and trailer." And as soon as I saw it, I was like, yes. Because, you know, not only was the group a great group, but they kind of become family after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn everybody's name, you learn stuff about them, and they just, you look forward to seeing those same people every time. And that was one thing I missed that camaraderie and being around all these guys. And as soon as I saw that, I sent it over to Rich. I was like, man, we got to do this.
Yeah, we got to go do this.
We got to do this. And Rich immediately was without thinking, was like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm in. No, you know, 100%.
I don't care what's going on. We're going to make this
work. We're going to make this happen. So I responded immediately. So, John, absolutely, we're in. And never done anything like that. You know, been on the receiving end of it, but never had done anything like that. So we knew that it would be something fun to do, and we were in. So fast forward to March, March 20-something, 29th, excuse me. And we've, you know, just finished our first, you know, track day as, you know, being on the other side of it. And it was interesting kind of being on the other side and seeing.
And listening to how the operation is running.
Hearing the conversations, hear what they say about different riders, and kind of makes you think about what they.
Yeah,
what they said about
were
us.
Were we part of that chatter in the past?
I'm sure we were. So, like I said, so it just finished our first track day. And
this Knucklehead 217, they're doing some stupid stuff out there. Please keep an eye on them.
and you know, again, like I said, we've got Sully, we got Bryce, we got our kids with us, because this is our family, and we want to share, you know, the experience and share the love of being here with them and transfer that to the next generation.
Yeah, and let's get Bryce and Sully to talk some more about that, because that's really our next step is moving to dirt, and not so much. I guess you originally started with like dual sport. You're like, yeah, we're gonna do dual sports. We're gonna do road and dirt. I guess our ambition was always more trail riding and maybe even some light track riding. That's what Bryce wants to do, but for us, it's like, I wanted purpose-built machines.
Right.
You know, I wanted the lightest, nastiest dirt bike I could find, because I know I'm going to be picking it up.
And that's and how you were. Fun. That's how you were with the track bikes too. Whereas, I've always been the
dedicated machine,
the jack of all trades is what I've been. Is that I want something that can do it all. I want it. You know, it can go get groceries and then it can go do a trail and then go do a track day. So I've always looked for the unicorn, and that's probably why I've gone through so many bikes, is that I've never found it.
Which one?
So, but the like I said, the started off with doing the more dual sport rides and everything else, but then I found myself right back in that same spot of, well, I'm out riding by myself again and not sharing that time with Sully. And then the one time there's a route in South Carolina called the South Carolina Adventure Route, and maybe that's something we talk about, you know, sometime down the road. The one time Sully and I went out on a motorcycle to do it together, and you can do it in any street legal vehicle, but just, you know, there's some pretty gnarly sections. We took this, 890 Adventure R out there, and it's actually just a couple minutes up from Carolina Motorsports Park. And we were on these quote unquote dirt roads, which were just sand. I mean, absolute pure sand, you know, probably 2 foot deep roads of just sand.
Like loose sand.
Sand. And we're on an 890 Adventure R, which is a, you know, 450-pound bike. You got me and you got Sully. So we're probably pushing 750, 800 pounds of just stuff. and we're plowing through this sand, and it was in the middle of summer, and it was exhausting. We crashed the bike once. It fell on top of us. I even made the comments, hey, we're probably going to crash. And within 30 seconds, we were on the ground with the bike on top of us, and we're just laughing. It didn't hurt because you're landing basically like falling on the beach, you know. So that's kind of where we were at there.
Karma's a quick thing, isn't it?
Karma is a quick thing.
Can we mention that one from today?
No, we can't.
No, okay. Just know that karma happens pretty quickly.
But Sully and I, we always do a father-son trip. You know, my wife works for the school district, so she has a couple weeks where Sully's at home by himself before he starts back school. So we always try to do a father-son trip. One year was, we did Deals Gap, and we did the whole mountain thing on a little CB500X and just had more fun than we should have. And then last year we decided to go to do the Hatfield-McCoy trails in West Virginia. You look at the maps and everything, you're like, oh, these are like dirt roads and this and that. Yeah. And, you know, nothing crazy. So we took a couple bikes out there. We took a little Honda Monkey, which is a little 125cc bike.
Hilarious.
Yeah, hilarious. And a Trail 125. And I'll let Sully kind of take over and explain how that worked out.
Well, I got to admit, it was interesting to try to take something that had no business being out there and doing something like that. So, actually, my dad has the funniest picture. So, second day, we were out there, and it's West Virginia, and they're trails, they're steep, like rocky, because there's three places, right? Like three different areas, like Rock House, Devil's Lands, and then
there's a whole bunch of Buffalo.
And then so we just did Devil's Lands and Rock House, like a little bit of Rock House. So we had decided, okay, well, we're gonna go to this one little pizza place in the town of Man, and we're gonna go eat there. Like we're gonna make a day trip out of it. We're gonna go right up there. And then eat, ride back on the trails. Be there about lunchtime, something like that.
And everybody we talked to a bunch of folks about it, and we showed them the map, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's 4 hours away. 4 hours away, 4 hours. And I was like, okay, cool. So if we leave at 8 a.m., we'll be there at noon. We'll have lunch, turn around, come back, be home by dinner, and, you know, have a pizza and go swim in the pool. So that's what we thought, at least.
And then we were 10 hours on the bikes.
10 hours to where?
10 hours to actually get to the town of Man. And like I said, we were exhausted. You know, Sully dropped his bike probably 8 or 10 times.
12 times.
12 times. And we were exhausted. So, you know, he's 13 at the time. And it's already 6 p.m., 7 p.m. by the time we get done eating. And we'd already, you know, we sucked down all of our water. We'd eat all our snacks because we had
a gallon and a half of water.
We had, you know, all on the trails. And we still had to turn around and get back. So at 13, I told him, I said, look, we're going to take the roads back. And even then it was about an hour to get back to the campground.
Going regular speed. We were on 125cc mini bikes that had no business being out there. Sketchy mountain roads. And so my dad tells me, hey, keep your helmet on. If we get pulled over, you left your ID back at the cabin, and we're on our way back to get it. So I'm gonna let him explain that a little bit better.
Well, so like I said, it took us a little over an hour to get back, and like I said, we were exhausted. It was, you know, close to 10 p.m. before we were done getting off the bikes and everything else, and we were supposed to have a whole another day of riding. And at that point, we were exhausted. We were done. Our cups were full. And so actually, I'm hoping that Rich and Bryce are going to join us back at the Hatfield-McCoy's Trails for the 2024 edition.
Yeah, we need to line that up because I like trail riding. And like I said, Bryce wants to do some track. That's kind of why we have motocross bikes. I have them because I want the lightest bike possible. And we experienced a little bit of that on our own property, trying to cut trails where, you know, it's tight, it's steep. You know, it's rugged terrain, and ended up dropping the bike a few times. That KX450, I don't remember the numbers, but it's like 230 pounds wet, like ready to rock and roll. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. It's not mid 200s. It's not pushing 300. I'm like, it's like 2 1/4, you know, all day long.
And how many horsepower?
50-ish. I mean, give or take.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but with 230 pounds,
yeah,
that's a fast bike.
You're only approaching 500 pounds with me on it.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's,
you still got
that's a fast bike.
50 horsepower. 56 horsepower, says Bryce, or some website he's looking at. So, yeah. 12-to-1 compression. Oh, it's a lot of fun.
So Sully and I, we decided after that you know, the bikes that we were on were fun, but we're not going to cut it. So we went through a couple different other bikes, and we ended up on a TW200, which is Sully has absolutely fallen in love with, and there's nothing special about them. It's early 1980s technology, you know, carbureted, air cooled, you know, big old fat tires. You got a rear tire on the front, and you got an ATV tire on the rear.
Fun bike to ride, though. I buzzed it around the pits here a few times.
Yeah,
it's 38 degree weather. It's a hoot. I mean,
it really is. Actually, at one point we had three of them, and because like my dad actually wanted to keep the other one.
Because why wouldn't we?
Right? Why not? Right?
And I made the comment today. We were sitting in the truck waiting for next call for the next like crash.
Yeah.
And I pulled out the picture of it, and it's just like three T-dubs sitting in the line, and I called it three dub.
Three dub. Nice. Nice. Did you ride it around today, Bryce, at all?
Yeah,
I rode around a little. It reminds me of the 450 a little, but a lot more torque, it seems, because it just pulls like a tractor. You let the clutch out a little, the smallest bit of gas, and you are just moving, just like the 450. You let it out a little, and it will just pull you along.
Yeah, you don't need to wind it up. You just put it in gear, let the clutch out, and off it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Almost as easy as the NC700. Which, you had a question on that bike, Brett?
Yeah, you mentioned a good all-around, do-everything bike. Would that NC700 count?
It's one that you could. I mean, not that you should, but you could do a track day on it. It wouldn't be fun. You could take it off-road, but it wouldn't be fun. You know, it's kind of a jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none.
Kind of sounds like a KLR 650.
Well, and I think that's why I now gravitate towards the purpose-built machines, because I had the KLR 650 and I did everything with it, but it was not good at any of those things that I like to do. It wasn't a good street bike, wasn't a good off-road bike. I mean, it was just it gave you the capability to do everything, but it wasn't competent at any of them. I mean, and competence is all relative. You know, I'm not an expert in any of this from a riding perspective, but you know what you like, and you know the feel of certain things. It's heavy for dirt. It's light for the street. It's kind of buzzy for the street. You know, you there's so much of a compromise, you don't get good at anything. So now that I had a purpose-built track bike that was, you know, rigid and loud and obnoxious and what you want on the track.
Hard to start.
So, well, no, that's the dirt bike. So yeah, then I have the purpose-built, you know, race dirt bike, which is light and fast and loud. And yeah, you kick until your leg is tired trying to get
Yeah,
it
which
started.
Like that one day we were there though, where we just like, just bought the four wheeler.
Yeah. I gave up riding it for the day because I just got tired of kicking it. I just put it down. I'm like, you guys go, I'm going to sit here and fiddle with my phone. I am done fiddling with this thing.
Except actually that loop we did. And that was the one before he broke his ankle.
Yeah.
We're going around, and I think it's like one of the turns on Trail A at Ennery. And I was taking it way too fast. And there's a video of it on your YouTube channel. I don't think it's public yet.
Yeah.
We need to make that public. That's funny.
Well, you can put links in the show notes and either
way.
Oh,
yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But yeah, you dumped the 230 on the same day.
Yeah. Like, just before he did. That's why you were riding the 230. And like, I was riding it, and it came around this turn. And if you don't take it with enough speed, and I saw it, my brain just automatically panicked, like, "Ooh, I gotta slow down on that." Yep.
And down.
And I slowed down, and I like went down, and I like tried to speed up again, and I went like almost over, so I had to overcorrect again, and didn't correct enough.
And down it went.
And like had a throttle go into my throat, and I had like my thumb go into like one of the covers, I think, and like pulled it backwards.
That sound's got to be picking up on the mic. It'll be curious to see if that comes through.
That yeah, go.
Some loud drift cars now.
You're not on there right now. You could.
I want to say one lesson I definitely learned from like the dirt riding was like bike control is something that like can really help a lot. Like when you're going in off-road and you don't notice the terrain, like with rough rocks and all that, and like you just go in, like, or like maybe slimy sticks and all that, you just go in. When you let the bike do what it does and you slowly like work the controls, you'd be surprised at like some of the things you're able to do and like control. It's really cool.
I mean, with the T-dub, it just like rolls over it. You like lower the
tire, yeah, those tire wide pressure. Balloon yeah. tires. That's gotta be great for going over obstacles yeah. and things. Yeah,
that's gonna sound funny in the podcast.
But yeah, Bryce found out the importance of vision and a little bit of knowing the trail, because we had. So after your injury, we had done Ennery again by ourselves, just trying to get more familiar with that place. I had a spill that day. You know, I had the bike all out of shape, and then I was about to go off the trail. And I'm going up like a steep turn, almost like a bank turn. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to fly over the back of this. So I dumped the clutch. Well, the bike stopped in this bank turn and then just slammed me to the right side of the ground. So here I am hitting the ground again on my right side, on the shoulder.
And this is how many months post-surgery?
This is just over a year.
Just over a year.
Yeah, just over a year. And I'm like, oh, that's probably not a good thing to do. So Bryce helps me get the bike up, and I think we told this on the podcast already, but he then gets, we get set off again, and he's hauling it out through there. You want to tell how it goes?
So we go through this, I think it was trail, what, like it was
the D? Bump out or extra? Yeah, because it's C, and then D kicks out and joins back in.
Yeah, we go through, and I'm just going along doing my thing. And I'm just not paying attention at the following path. And I end up in a ditch, and I'm about to jump out of it, but then end up stalling. So now I have the bike like 45 degree angle in this ditch, crash there. And I was confused at what happened. The path just slowly closed in, and I just wasn't paying attention.
Well, this is not knowing the trail. You crest over a hill. And you think you would crest over the hill and it goes straight. Well, it turns slightly to the right. And if you go straight, you end up in the ditch. At the end of the ditch is a giant drain pipe. So he hit kind of the head end of a drain pipe. And there he sits on a 45 degree angle in the ditch. So that was picking up second bike today.
Again, on Trail C. We all have a story from Trail C.
That was D. So in the parking lot, they're telling us,
that was D, yeah.
Have you guys tried D? Have you tried D? No, we haven't done it. And every time we go out and come back, they're like, have you tried D yet? No, we haven't got to it. Finally, after enough pestering, we tried D, and then we both crashed.
And then you tried D.
So I think I was on Trail C, and it had just rained, and my dad and my mom, they were on the four-wheeler. So they're out there, they're riding, and they're riding in front of me. I'm still on the 230 at this time, right? Yeah. I think that was like the last time we were there, actually. And
I think we're losing one.
Yeah. And it had like just rained. And I keep saying mom. Why? So we're riding, and like I get to this one little hill, and it's nothing incredible.
That's karma. Sorry.
And
squirrel. So we should probably describe that we're all quite tired. We didn't arrive here at Road Atlanta until 11 o'clock before we ended up settling in and, you know, getting the RV set up and probably pushing midnight before I went to bed. And then we were up after 5 this morning. We did 12 pickups with the crash cart, or we had 12 calls. We picked up and delivered 10 bikes back to the pits. So it was a busy day, and here we are at 9:10, and we're all a little tired.
Anyway, the little thing I was talking about. So I'm on the 230, and I see this little hill, and I didn't think like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. I saw the four wheeler go right up it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, I can easily do that. So I picked the center line because it's like, it's not the deepest, but it's not like it's not like drop off on both sides. And it's only like a 3, maybe 4 foot little hill. And I get up on it and there's ATVs behind us and they're not going very fast. It's like 2 little girls and a dad. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I just kind of get it. And it I'm in second gear at the time, and it goes up the hill and it stops. The mud.
Now you're stuck. Yeah.
It was so sticky and like muddy, I guess. That's what a term I'd use. Mud gets muddy. Yeah, mud gets very muddy. Thank you. Yeah.
And sticky.
And like it just like got stuck right there. So I'm sitting there and just finally this, like one guy comes behind me and they're off in the woods and the comm unit on my helmet like died. And they couldn't hear me because they were like a couple hundred feet ahead of me. So this dude behind us on the ATVs had to like help me get the bike out of it.
Yeah, push it out of that mud.
And then I stall it like as soon as I got to the top. He's like, "You good, man?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm good." He said, "All right." So I'm sitting there just, dang. I just stall it.
But I will give Sully credit because, like I said, you know, that was his first motorcycle with a clutch. And that was the reason behind the Trail 125 is that he just, you know, for whatever reason, he just could not get the clutch down pat. And then it gets on this 230 after the Trail 125 and he's a rock star.
He's jamming it.
He's jamming it. And, you know, he's a very cautious person. Well, his riding style and Bryce's are completely opposite. Bryce sends it and then we'll figure out what's on the other side. So he's like, let me go around this kind of slow.
And he's like, I'm going to ride around the back and see what's over there.
Let's see what's over there first. And that's just a, you know, different riding style and everything else. And, you know.
It's one thing with like the bikes, at least that I've ridden now, is that's one thing I liked about the 140 is the power on it was really good, really predictable, very, at least for me, it was nice, smooth power band for learning. It's just, it was kind of heavy for what, for a smaller bike, and the suspension wasn't very good on it. So I'd be launching it over jumps and just bottoming out the suspension. And that's kind of why I wanted a motocross bike, is something light, something with good suspension. That's because now I ride a 2015 250. But the problem is the power on it is it's a little too much. It makes, let's see here, makes 43 horsepower at 11,500 RPM, has 13.8 to 1 compression. So on some of those trails, it's definitely a handful.
Well, the thing about the 140 and Bryce is that he rode it like he stole it.
Oh, ooh. Cuts deep, huh?
And that leads us into our next story.
You know, we didn't talk about it on the show. I guess we can share it now. But when we said previously on the show that we got rid of the bike, we didn't really get rid of it. It was stolen.
So, this is part of that transition with the 140. I think I've outgrown the power and outgrown the bike. And I think, like, I've matured enough with my riding to get something different. And I'm looking around. I'm thinking CRF 150 RB. They're, like, mini race bike, like YZ125s. And I'm like, you know, just maybe just get a 250 because, I don't know, see what happens. So after weeks of waiting, finally get someone that wants to buy the 140. And it was suspicious. Start of January of 24, brand new account and no profile picture, asking the most basic Facebook marketplace question of, hi, is it still available? And I was asking my dad, I'm like, I'm not sure about this. And we just kept thinking, oh, maybe it's, because he said he was like a fairly young kid. So we're thinking, oh, new account, things like that. And we just walked right into it. And finally, on January 26, we load the bike up, head over to meet the guy. And, you know, we're thinking, he said 5 o'clock. We're there early. And, you know, we're waiting. It's 5:30. You know, and even there's some suspicious things, a blacked out Dodge Charger, very tinted windows rolls in. And then, you know, he says he'll be 15 minutes late. He's showing up in an Uber. So at first we're confused. We're like, so he's most definitely gonna have to go home with the bike. And I'm thinking maybe he's actually gonna buy it. I'm like, okay, you know, this is good, potentially. He shows up, seemed really nice kid for that talk we had, and he's like, yeah, can I take it for a quick test ride? And I look at dad and I'm like, I don't know, maybe. And then we're like, sure, fine, you know. we unload the bike.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, we're thinking, we're like, what's the worst that could happen? This Dodge Charger, by the way, still running in the parking lot. So he gets on it, and we talked. He said that he had an older 140. You know, it was the smaller size back then. So we're like, oh, okay, you know. So he's had experience with this type of bike. It hasn't changed in years. So, you know, basically same thing. He takes off very slow. He goes up to third gear, and I'm like, okay, so, all right. Nerves are calmed down a little. He stops, and I'm like, oh, maybe it just quit because, you know, it's for whatever reason, even though it's fairly new and carbureted, it just doesn't run as right. And then he stops by that Dodge Charger, puts his hood up, and he goes down this breezeway. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, okay, because I realize he can just turn around, go through all five gears, because I would do the same, you know, make sure everything's good. And then I hear the bike speed up. I watch him jump this mound and take off down the road at the school. And at that moment, I was like, I'm saluting, like, well, that is the last time I will see that bike. So far, last time I saw it.
It was an interesting experience. So, yeah, we both learned a lot from that. And Bryce was gutted. There was, like, no consoling him for a while. I mean, he was just beside himself. But he had some real moments of maturity later that night. Like, we were settled in for bed, and he's going to sleep. And he's like, well, you know what, Dad? You know, lessons learned. And, you know, nothing worse happened. You know, there was no bad things other than that. And I had even said on the car ride home, I'm like, well, let's think about this. If he was willing to steal the bike, what if we said no to the test ride? What's the next move? Like, we may have just avoided something much more dangerous than just a bike being stolen. So we kind of counted our blessings, you know, took our lessons learned and moved on. And the next day,
we picked up a wrecked 2015 KX250F as a flip, but looking to be a keeper now, though.
Yeah, so it was a little better. He was happier the next day. We bought this 250 for, what was it, $2,800. We put a couple $100 in plastics and, you know, bars and clip-on parts, and now it's a fully functional bike, and it's a very low hours bike, even though it's a 2015. The owner said it only had about 50 hours on it. And when you look at, like, the engine cases and everything, like the wear marks, it's like, yeah, this has not been ridden a lot for, you know, for being a 10-year-old bike. And it runs like, holy cow. I mean, this is otherworldly better than the 450 because it's newer. It revs so much higher. It sounds better, and it just rips. I mean, the bike is amazing. We're gonna put some videos in the show notes, like Bryce trying to launch control and doing a master class on how to save it. It was good stuff.
But going back to the 140, like that day, I was, even though I was deflated, I looked back and I was like, the 140 can be replaced. Like, if I really wanted another one, we can get another one. And, you know, going to the next day to get our first project bike to start working on, that kind of helped too, because it's like, even though we lost one, we're picking up another one, and then we're going to hopefully have a little bit of fun with this, plus with it being a 250, you know, watching them in Supercross and all that, it's like, you know, we were in for something there.
And I will say that the first time out at we went to Carolina Adventure World, of course, Alan was still healing, and you were not too much on the two wheels at that point, and four-wheelers, well, I don't say it's a bit much for that area, but it's not going to be as fun as two wheels for sure. And he was riding it, you know, like you said, with Sully, more timid, you know, not sure, and just kind of that new bike experience. So, and I made the comment later in the day, I was like, you know, you were way faster on the 140. And he's like, yeah, I was. This is a rip snorting race machine, but yeah, he's still getting used to it. And it's still tall. He can't get over that. It's a tall bike. So why don't we put a bow on this one for now? But as sort of a summary topic, I want each of you to give me your thoughts on the next step. Like, what are you looking forward to? Is it, you know, a certain ride location, a certain type of riding, a certain type of motorcycle? What are you looking forward to most over the next couple of months and on into the summer here of 2024? And we'll start with Bryce.
Heading into the summer, I want to definitely try some more bikes out. I want to, like, experience those different bikes because, in my opinion, going from the 140 to the 250, I didn't feel comfortable immediately on the 250, especially at CAW because it was wet, it was slimy, it was not the best conditions, but the bike was also really tall. So I want to try out some other things, like I said earlier, like the YZ125 or Honda CRF 150RB, because then I can try out some different bikes and see what I like. And then maybe if after all that, I could end up going back to a 250, having all that experience on other bikes. But I also want to try out some new trails. Like instead of going CAW, Ennery, I want to expand and like go to different places like Hatfield at McCoy and things like that.
What about Manchester?
That too.
Hundreds of whoops. Whoop, 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 whoop. Yeah, and I think we had we're still undecided, but I thought we had talked for a while. The 250 was going to be my bike, so we're starting to make it a trail bike. We put a skid plate on it. We put a set of hand protectors on it. Just kind of starting to make it more of a trail bike. You know, more protective stuff, not so much a supercross bike. And I still have the 450, which I was more comfortable riding. I mean, the 250 is better in the power band for off-road. The gearing is different, you know, lets me use more gears. But the tip in the throttle is not as smooth as the 450. And I don't know if that's just the early fuel injection or whatever, but I kind of ride the 450 better, especially as it gets more technical. So I guess that's what I'm looking forward to, getting in the groove with that 250 and making that the trail bike for the summer, especially if you end up with something, you know, like the 150 RB or something like that. But yeah, Sully, what are you looking forward to?
I'm not really sure. I guess I'll write that when it comes to it, because like I want to get a street bike. And part of the reason I like riding the T-Dub is because in a couple of years, 2028, when I get out of high school, me and my dad, we're going to take some sort of bike. Could be an NC700.
Yeah.
And we're going to take them from where we are in Charlotte. We're going to take them to Seattle first.
Wow. Cross country.
Just wait. we're going to go up through Canada into Alaska to Anchorage.
Oh, wow.
And then we're going to take them to the top of the United States in Prudhoe Bay.
Wow. That's a trip.
It's like I take a month and a half, I think.
Are you bringing the bikes back or are you going to? I think your dad was talking about just selling them wherever you end up.
Probably end up selling them in Anchorage
and then
flying back. Home. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd really be that bad of an idea just to fly home, call it there.
That sounds like a wild trip. I don't know if I could pull off that much time, but it'd be cool if we could join you for some of it. Maybe, you know, head partially across the country with you and then head back or something. But yeah, I'd like to join for some of it if we can.
I mean, by that point, Bryce will be 18. Bryce will be 19 by then.
You're a little bit older than Sully?
Yeah.
He's by a little bit? Okay.
What, like a year older? It's over a year.
Now, if your dad comes back,
he's taking his sweet, precious time coming back in
the door. We can get his summary and then we can close it up.
Anyway, in the meantime, I can talk about Hatfield McCoy a little bit.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about Hatfield and McCoy's. Like, I guess more like the layout, you know, the trail style. I know you said it's rocky and steep and things like that, but tell us a little bit more about that.
It's,
you can see it.
It's mostly just up and down, like, what was it, like 4 or 5 mountains?
Yes.
You went like over the mountain, back across the mountain. So you're like going back and forth across the Appalachian Mountains. Just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, like the entire time.
And they're maps, you know, you've got green, you've got blue, and you've got black. And you think.
So they're graded kind of like ski trails.
Yeah, you'd think. Well, yeah, but, you know, the green, even the green are hard. Even the green trails, which are the easy trails, are harder than the hardest thing at Ennery. So it was kind of we were not really expecting that. So it's going to be interesting going back and doing it again with a little bit of knowledge of what to expect. So
while you were outside enjoying the smoke show, we were just giving our wrap and summary more in terms of what are we looking forward to for the next few months and into the summer. you know, is it a bike? Is it a trail? Is it a ride? You know, that kind of thing. And then we're kind of wrapping it up.
Mine really is just, getting back on the bike. I mean, I've been on a bike a couple times, but really not riding hard. Being able to get back out there, really feeling confident on my ankle, and not pushing it too hard. Technically I've recovered, but that's when you're in your 40s, that's a lot longer than when you're not in your 40s. So, just getting back out there again, going back out with the our sons and riding together and, continuing to learn, but basically it's a whole new way of riding. You know, some of the concepts are the same, but most of the stuff on the track does not translate over to the off road. So the challenge of learning something new again, another box to check off,
But we will take all of our common lessons learned though, like preparation, hydration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All that's still going to be key. We still got to keep that up. It's just different riding.
Yeah.
It's just different riding style. And I guess I'll echo that. I'm looking forward to doing it as a group, all four of us, everybody that goes gets to ride instead of track days where everybody went, but you and I did the riding and they did the observing and, not that the kids didn't have fun, but full participation is way more rewarding overall. And maybe that's the right word, is rewarding. It's not just fun. It's the bonding time is on a whole nother level.
Just a bit of a side note, that one crash where I got the picture, you got the picture of me doing that, mm-hmm. sitting on the hill, just looking defeated. Actually, I got a video of it because my GoPro was on the motorcycle.
So, oh, was it?
Yeah.
I think maybe we'll use that as the cover photo for the episode.
it's a great trail.
Yeah.
Honestly, wouldn't be the only thing that's on the internet of me getting hurt.
Ouch.
There's a video of me falling off the ladder. That's a fun video.
All right.
On YouTube.
Well, this has been awesome.
Sully getting hurt.
This is the long awaited, I guess not just a crash conversation, but this is a show we've been wanting to do for a while. It's getting everybody together and we got to do more of these this year. Maybe do one at Ennery or after Ennery or something like that. Or certainly if we all end up at Hatfield and McCoy's, which I think needs to happen. So we got to get on that.
Yes.
Bryce and I got to get on that.
We know we are going. I just got to determine if you are going.
Is it a cab? Is it a one bedroom cabin or a two bedroom cabin? Well,
they have both. They have both. They have
saying that's the decision, right? Yeah.
They got like these tents, and I got to admit, we were looking at it and it was like, yeah, we should just get a tent instead. And we were looking at it, it's like, we're glad we didn't get a tent because there was no air conditioning, no microwave, no refrigerator, no nothing.
Yeah.
The bed smelled like fleece.
We like the idea of roughing it, but then we really like the idea of not roughing it. So, yeah.
A lot to be said for a good night's sleep and a hot shower. Yeah. And air conditioning, especially in August. Amen.
But like, for the Trail 125, though, it had like a little rack on the back, and you could take it probably, 3 feet of water? And it's got a snorkel on it that goes to the back of the rack. And we just put a grenade box on there, like a literal grenade box from thinking like traced back 1989, I want to say.
Yeah.
And carried a hatchet with us, and thank God for that hatchet. Carried like, I think too much stuff. Yeah, we carried way too much stuff.
Surprise.
Relatable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we will wrap it up there. We're going to do we'll do a couple more in this next year, 2024. And we also share in some other hobbies. So we got to have a show where we pivot and have some pew pew talk as well. We'll mix that in next time.
There's a thing for a pew pew right there.
30 millimeter
A10 shell.
Looking forward to it. Like I said, this is fun. And like I said, it's fun to, to have friends, but then to have friends that you have stuff that relatable. And, it's like, if you're into motorcycles, you're into guns. If you're into guns, you're probably into motorcycles.
Yeah.
And
it almost goes hand in hand.
It almost goes hand in hand. So call it the Loud Barrel podcast.
Well, they're all pipes, right? Yeah.
Smoking pipes.
That's not really my
time. Yeah. Wouldn't that more be like drugs? I don't know.
I just want to point out, coming soon at hopefully at maybe within a year or two here. Don't want to get too far ahead, but thinking about a Loud Pipes motorcycle repair shop. So just throwing that out there real quick. So nothing's guaranteed yet, but it's a thought that's slowly coming into motion with the bike flipping and all that. But we'll keep you posted on that.
Bryce, we made the cards, the business cards in the car today.
Y'all made a website for crying out
loud. Yeah, we basically made a website, yeah.
All right, do you know how to sign it off?
No.
Locked and loaded, kickstands up.
All right, on that note, kickstands up.
Forgot the lock and load.
On that note, lock and load, kickstands up.
Good night.
Thank you for listening. Please consider supporting the show. Find more details at loudpipes.net/donate.